Here we are with our third episode of Rich Tapestries with Nuria. Good to see you again, Nuria. Welcome.
Thank you, Bryce. And Samia, it's such a joy, you know, doing this podcast with you. I'm truly enjoying it.
It's good, isn't it? We've got an old buddy of mine on the podcast today, Edward Conte, who I got to know at Auburn Salvation Army. He was actually working at the front desk there, and when I forgot my keys, he'd always let me in, which was very kind of him. So Edward's a good fella, and we have a good time together and enjoy each other's company. So looking forward to our chat, Edward. But Nuria, would you like to tell us a bit about Edward and introduce this session for us? Thank you.
So welcome to our another episode of Rich Tapestries, where we explore stories that inspire, uplift, and occasionally leave us in stitches. So today we have a guest whose journey is as rich in faith as it is in flavor. Welcome our lovely Edward Conte, a man whose name carries the legacy of Sierra Leone's Northern Limba tribe. Originally from the north, Edward's lineage speaks to the deep traditions and values of his people. Though Edward's native tongue is Limba, he is also very fluent in many languages and would love to hear from him. We'll soon find out about that and how it unites Sierra Leoneans from all walks of life. Edward's passion for community building and spiritual leadership truly shines through in all he does. So whether it's preaching the word of God or engaging in outreach, his commitment to seeing people come to Christ is just unwavering. And let's not forget his culinary roots. When I was talking to Edward, he mentioned that he does miss the food from Sierra Leone, and his favorite dish is a hearty Sierra Leonean curry known as cassava leaves, and it's so delicious that even the cassava plant might be jealous, isn't it, Edward?
Yes.
Okay, and there's more to this dish. So it's just not rich in flavor, but full of nutrition and making it a wholesome addition to any meal. So without further ado, let's dive into Edward's story and explore the journey that brought him from the hills of Sierra Leone to the shores of Australia. So Edward, I would love to welcome you in your very own language, which is the Limba language. And please correct me if I'm wrong. Mande Edward, Namina Kutorko. Wali Wali.
You.
Awesome. That was good, Edward. And can you please explain what was it? So listeners will love to know what language and what we spoke about.
Well, this is the Limba tribe, which I hail from. And it's a tribe from the northern part of Sierra Leone. And both my parents are Limbers, so I'm from the Limba culture. So you just greeted me, and I greeted both of you, and thank you for welcoming me.
Beautiful.
It's a pleasure. It's good to have you here. Tell me a bit about your childhood. Where were you born? And tell me a bit about your mum and dad and what life was like when you first came into the world.
Well, like I just said earlier on, my parents came from the north, but they actually settled in the western, which is the city area of Sierra Leone. And they both Limbers, and they were seeking better life and better opportunities, especially when they were thinking about raising up their children. So they both came from the north, and we settled in the Freetown, Sierra Leone, which is the capital city, and that's where we were raised up and go to school from the west.
So in the north, is it sort of rural, much more country, and you went to a city? Is that what you're saying?
Yes, it's a rural country, and in fact, a typical village setting where if you go in a safari or you go in a tropical area, that's what you find there.
And so when you were a child, did you grow up in a little village, and when did you come to the city? How old were you when you came to the city?
Pretty young, at the age of possibly 5 or 6.
Okay.
But in saying that, not that my parents have already moved, they've already moved to the city, and my mom went back after she got pregnant, and then she went to my grandparents to have the baby and then bring me back to the city.
So do you have memories of village life, and did you live in a little hut or a house, or was there roads? Tell us a bit about what village life was like as a young child. Yeah.
Village life, Bryce, is actually different from what you think now. I live from a palm thatch house, a mud-built house and palm thatch from the bush, and that's where most of the people live in those days. And but saying that, when I came back to the city, I have opportunity to go back and visit as a teenage, at the age of 15, 16, and going to feel the cultural part of it and spend more time with my cousins, other relatives, uncles and auntie, and do exactly what they used to do in the farm, leave in the morning and come at night, have food in the farm, and just come up to sleep in the night. Yeah.
So did you have electricity and running water, things like that, or did you cook on a fire? How did you... Tell me a bit about
you. Definitely don't have electricity.
You do? Yeah.
No electricity. You cook from a fire, a tree stone puts together, and place wood underneath and set the fire under, and then you have to cook the meal.
Right. And tell me about the sort of food you ate. Did you have meat, or was it mainly a vegetarian meal? What was it like?
Of course not, Bryce. I'm not a vegetarian. One of my favorite meals is cassava leaf, which is cooked mainly in Sierra Leone, especially when you have visitors, expected visitors. And then, this uncle is coming from this far, or these guests are coming, they'll cook you the cassava leaf. And the cassava leaf is cooked so rich in a way that all creatures, great and small, is in there. They'll put some meat, they'll put lamb, they'll put goat. Whatever meat is available at the time, they'll cook that with that curry.
Yeah. Edward, now that you mentioned about cassava leaves as your favorite dish, and which we spoke about earlier as well, it's not only tasty, but it's packed with nutrients like vitamin A and C and iron and calcium. So would you say that food plays a special role in your cultural and community life?
Yes. It's good you ask the question, Raya. From all my experience back home, when we have a new mother, like a lady just gave birth to a child, that will be the very first curry they'll cook for that lady.
Wow.
And it is believed that it will fast track the breast or the milk in the breast to give the baby, and that's what they will cook for that young suckling mother.
Wow. So it has such an important, presence in your culture. That's
very, very much.
So, I'm assuming it's not a very hot curry because you wouldn't want too much spicy milk, would you? I would have thought. I don't know much about this, but
not like that, Bryce. I think food is also a different therapy to a different people.
Mm.
We can still cook cassava leaf with no chili, no spice. And you can still cook it with spicy or chili. So it all depends on who want to eat, what they want to eat. Yeah. Well, from my own experience, most of the curry that I know that my parents were cooking got chili.
I bet,
It's all about the nutritional value, I believe. Which is packed in it. Excellent.
Fantastic. And did you go to school at the village, or did you go to school just in the city?
I went to school in the city.
Okay. And what was that like for you? Did you enjoy school?
Yes. And in as much as it was in the city, we still have some challenges, which we love as fun. We walk to school and back home, and we carry our lunch in our pack, and then during lunchtime, we share together with other one or two friends. But on to my secondary school level, high school, if I could say, I always walk to school, from school and back home.
And Evan, what about, like, what language was your schooling done in? Was that a specific?
Sierra Leone is an English colony.
Yep.
So we write English in school.
Right.
And so when we come to places like Australia, it's not that we don't understand English. The problem that we have is to flow with the Australian accent that people can get it. And what has impacted our English so much is that because of many languages spoken.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I only speak English at school to do my work and other things.
Mm.
But when I come home or play time with friends, we speak other languages to flow.
Yeah. So you mentioned, you know, when we spoke earlier, that you not only speak English, but you do know many languages, and obviously Limba is your mother tongue. Is that right?
Yes.
Yes. So how important has language been in maintaining your connection to your roots and your community?
Language plays a very major connecting part in life, in community. So what does this mean? So I came from the north. Limba is my parents' language of birth. But in the north, there's another language there called Timne. You know.
What is it? Timne.
Timne. It's spelled as T-E-O-N-N-E.
Uh-huh.
Timne. And so there are other languages there which are also being spoken in the north there.
Yep.
But the ones that I'm familiar with is my tongue, my mother tongue, the Limba, spoke Timne. And of course, the Creole is a pidgin, like a general language for across the country.
Yep.
And then in the east, they speak a language called Mende.
Mende,
yes. It's M-E-N-D-E.
Beautiful.
It's spelled Mende. It's called Mende. Now, I can hear Mende.
Yep.
I can pronounce one or two things, but if you talk to me exactly, I will flow with what you're talking to me about. But I'm not fluent, like I can speak Timne, Creole, Limba.
Awesome. So you understand Mende, but you are
very, very well. I can communicate. I can do whatever it is done to be done there or what needs to be done there. Yes.
It's so wonderful to hear how languages serve as a bridge to your heritage and to most of, you know.
That's right, Neria. Yeah. If you go to the east, east and the south, their predominant language is Mende.
Yeah.
So if you want to live that culture, you want to say you want to do church life there, you want to do business there, you know, you got to, you know, communicate in their language. When you go to the north, the Timne and the Limbas are more dominant there. And you have other languages like Kwanko, Fulas, Madingos, Yalunka, and so many other languages being spoken there. You know? So it will interest you to know that even in the Limba, there are 16 branches of Limba.
Wow.
So 16. I am, yes, my mother was a Biriwa and my father was a Safaroko Limba. Yes, so but they're all in the same region.
Wow, such a powerful tool for preserving cultural
16,
identity. Beautiful.
Yeah, wow. Excellent. Can I ask, what did your mum and dad do for a living? Like, they were farmers in the village, but what did they do in the city?
So when they moved to the city, my dad became a truck driver.
Ah, yes.
And my mom was housewife and doing like petty trading kind of mini stuff to sell around, not going too far. Yes, and she saw a few stuff. Like I can remember I was part of that business going to sell palm oil on Saturdays when there's no school. And then when she does fufu, fufu is another food pounded cassava, which is, so I used to sell those on a weekend on a Saturday when I don't go to school or on school holidays so I can raise some money.
And did you have brothers and sisters?
Yes, I have. Oh, my background or my parental background, my dad was married to three wives. And so I have step brothers and sisters. And I have a biological sister of the same mom. So we were six. But at this moment, we're just three because three have passed away.
Wow. How hard is it to be married to three wives? I find it hard enough to be married to one. Don't tell the lovely Sue I said that.
So that was their culture. So.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow. And does that still continue in your culture?
Because of the now age, you know, everybody is becoming more aware of the economy. But yeah, I don't think it's practice highly anymore. But people still in the village can do that.
So you lived with your father and three wives in the same house, is that right?
Interesting, right, Bryce?
Yeah.
That's interesting. Yeah. Okay.
Good. Yeah.
And I guess teenage life, you grew up in the city after age of five. Mm. I guess you went to school and Tell me about what that was like. Did you like school, and did you flourish there? Were you academic? And
yes, one of the big things for us was to get educated and become somebody in life at the end of the day. In turns, from what you see, you're going to pick up the responsibilities of taking care of your family. So you want to do well, and your mom is always on your side, encouraging you to push more. Mm. Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And did you get good marks at school, and or were you sporty or academic or musical? What did you like to do at school?
I will not talk about sporty because I was not too sporty. And the school that I went to, high school that I went to, they're just doing cricket, not so much of the sports. But athletics was part of a school curriculum that we got annually. And it was unfortunate I did not have any medal.
Okay. You're a pretty solid sort of a fellow. Were you a solid little kid? Stocky, like quite large?
No. Really, really bright. I was very slim to die. And in fact, I was a marathon runner.
Oh, wow.
No, really? Yeah, wow.
That was going to be my question. But here you go. You already answered.
Yeah, I was a marathon runner. And I do that for fun or just those kind of competitions. Mm. And yes, and even to my time to Australia, I was so slim. It's when I begin to visit the KFC, the McDonald's.
Oh.
And the Hungry Jack and Red Roosters, they all get stuck somewhere.
Well, you're just immersing yourself in Australian culture.
Yeah, that's right. With Biola, did you move, did you meet Biola in your country or was it in Australia? Can you talk about that a bit?
Well, I met Biola back home.
I mean, in many cultures, it's arranged marriages. Was yours like that or did you just choose Biola?
No. Biola is a very, from outside, Biola was a godly woman. Uh-huh. And I found a church and so we believe it was a God prayer and answer.
Oh, wow.
Excellent.
And which church were you part of?
We were going to do two different churches. So I was going to Assemblies of God and she was going to a Methodist kind of church.
And what prompted you to come to Australia? What was that story?
That's a very good one. It was not a prompt. It was a God-saving moment. Uh-huh. Because we have a civil war. Back in Sierra Leone, we got targeted by the wrong people and we have to flee and move to a refugee land, the survivor, which was a neighboring country. Mm. And we were there trying to survive, live life, where we are actually informed that Biola's auntie is in Australia. And that's when those good news started and we start working through that.
Oh, wow. And so adjusting, coming to Australia, which you were not planning to, but you possibly were forced to, right?
Me in particular, I have no other relative that I've ever traveled overseas. Mm.
So with the pressure to move, was there someone attacking you? Like, did you have to flee in the night?
Yeah, we have to flee for our lives.
Oh,
well, goodness.
And that's why we end up in a refugee space.
Oh.
So did some people come and attack your village or something like that?
No, this was in the city then.
In the city?
Yeah. Oh. So there was a civil war. Everything was mixed up, chaotic, world injury, and life endangered.
And so did you arrive by boat or was that, you took a flight from Sierra Leone?
No.
This is via Guinea, isn't it? You went to Guinea for quite a few years.
And then we got sponsored by Biola's auntie and uncle, who were already in Salvation Army. So they were already going to Auburn.
That's how you did come in contact with the Salvation Army?
Yes. And I've never known about the Salvation Army because the churches that we have by then was no Salvation Army in Sierra Leone. So when I see Salvation Army first, I thought, this was a regular army that does church, Is it covering letter or support letter they gave to the immigration that we finally read on? So the Salvation Army.
And so did you fly from Guinea to Sydney or to Melbourne? Where did you go?
Yeah, so we flew from Guinea to Sydney, and we were welcomed by a mass group of Salvationists, kind of like the old church.
Oh, wow.
Really?
White people, black people, singing.
Wow.
Nelson Kistan was the one leading us team as we walked out of the exit, okay? Yeah. And we saw flowers, people were singing, and people were crying, you know. Like, we all as aunties were crying, and cousins who were already here were crying. And it was emotional scene in Sydney that...
Wow.
Yeah, wow.
This is so beautiful.
Isn't that wonderful? What a welcome to the country. Yeah. Better than most people. That's terrific.
Absolutely. So in what ways, once you've come in contact with the Salvation Army, Edward, did you guys start attending the church service in Auburn? Or because you mentioned earlier that you did not belong to the Salvation Army. So can you sort of talk about it a little bit?
Yeah, so we arrived on the 9th. Because I think that was a Thursday or so, whatever day that. But yeah, the following day or two, we actually went to the church itself.
Yeah.
At Auburn. By then, the church was at New Street.
That was the old one.
The old one. Yeah.
Yes.
So,
yes.
Which was opposite the Aldi.
Correct.
Mm. Yeah. Correct. So we went to church that morning, and so we were welcome again.
Mm-hmm.
We were introduced. We were called to the front, a long line of 9 people.
You must have felt so loud upon, right? At your arrival, the beautiful welcome, and then again. So that must have sort of helped you feel at home and, you know, feel belonged. Was that the feeling?
That was it. That was a defining moment. Showing you being welcomed.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
Even though you were welcomed so warmly and had so many people from your country there, what were some of the challenges you found adjusting to Australian culture?
The very first one was the weather.
It was cold, or was it
hot?
It
was very cold.
Very cold.
Okay. Sierra Leone, you got summer and spring, which is rainy season. And also, the jet lag was there, was not too long, but now getting to integrate was not a problem because of accent.
Yeah.
When you talk, people sometimes laugh. People kind of like just shave your side, and you know, those kind of challenges and getting to do life with people. You got an experience, you got an idea, but how you want to communicate it was a really tough space there. And you sometimes feel rejected by yourself, like you said, oh, even if I do this, they will not accept it, those kind of things. That was a difficult, those were challenges that we face a lot.
Yeah.
And the good thing is we integrate into TAFE. We get to TAFE and then start meeting people around. But the church was actually helpful. People from the church will come and get us and take us for lunch or dinner or something around.
Mm-hmm.
And
So navigating those cultural differences would have been obviously complex, you know, but I think that support which you got from church obviously helped in many ways. So I would like to say, and now that you mentioned about the language, I would like to say in Creole, tenki for sharing within na the problem them where you face, where you first come Australia. Is that good?
You try. Thank you for share with me when he talks to Fire Quiet. Well, if you want to put it in the Creole, thank you for talk with me.
Uh-huh.
The problem the way you face with kind of Australia.
Thank you, I tried.
Okay.
Good effort. Like, you came to Australia while you were an adult. What was your work when you were back in Guinea or Sierra Leone?
Yeah.
And was that skill able to be transferred to Australia?
My original skill was printing technology.
Oh.
Okay.
And then my side skills were also community-based, if you call it here, but I was also an event person. So I help people organize their wedding, christenings, engagement, anything confunctional. But coming to Australia is a different world. And then, of course, I've worked in the church setting as well. My previous appointment in the church was the protocol chairman. So I look after all guests, like international guests, especially guest speakers and all those kind of things. So back to the question is, I went to one or two factories to pick up my printing technology.
Yep.
There was no opportunity for me. So I didn't get to do that. And I got a job at Primo, small goods. So I was working there, and then I got trouble with my license. My license was suspended, and I wouldn't drive to work. So, and Primo was in a strategic point where you have to drive. So skills-wise, I was not able to do that, but I tried to integrate myself into other things that can get me going.
It's one of the great challenges of immigrating, isn't it? The skills and the things that used to give you a livelihood back home are no longer... It's something I think I hear quite a lot. It must be so discouraging, so difficult to feel valid, you know.
And go back to ground zero and start again, all over again. Yeah. And that's a resilience, Bryce, we see in our call communities. Truly commendable, I must say. So, Edward, yes, you mentioned that you started with the small goods. Is that correct?
Yeah, Primo.
Yes. So, did you continue there? And now that you are an officer, can you talk about that journey, you know, how you transitioned into becoming an officer at the Salvation Army?
Yeah, that's a really interesting transition, or a very good journey. So I gave up the job at Primo, and Fred picked me up and said, oh, you know what, you can't be like this. We need to look for something for you. And so it connected me to... The warehouse work at Redfern. So when I go, the boss picked me up. He said, you're not going to be labor and you're going to be storekeeper. And so, he promoted me. I've been taking stock and everything. Yeah. And so I was there, and the opportunity came up again for a concierge in Auburn. So this was interesting. When I went for the interview, I think there were six in number. I was the only African there. So prior to the interview, I got nursing as my referee. And he said to me, you know what, I'm going to pull off from your referee because it will sound conflict of interest. So I won't represent you as referee anymore. I think I will be in that panel or so. So I have to change nursing. So I went to the interview for the day. After the interview, I came out and Viola said to me, how did you go? I said, I don't think my English or my language will allow me to be nominated or selected to go for a concierge, which is a front office.
Yeah.
Ah, okay. That's good. We were driving back by then. We were living in Guildford. So we were driving back just at the RSL in Maryland. My phone ringed up again. The HR lady, who was called Shalini. Shalini was the lady that was actually in HR. She rang me and said, oh, Edward, we're considering to offer you the job. When would you want to work?
Wow, hallelujah.
Yeah. And this is for the new DHQ that was going to be opened at Auburn, you know. I said, yes. I said, well, normally it's 2 weeks' notice to the other employer. I said, so, I think in 2 weeks I should have send out my resignation in another place so I can come and work. He said, okay. So 10 minutes later, she rang again and said, look, we want to put you to a training at Redfern so that you can be trained as a concierge. There was a guy in Redfern who was a concierge there. So he said, we'll send you there and then we're going to train. So instead of 2 weeks then, it reduced to a week. He said to me, we're going to pay you for that week.
Wow, that's beautiful.
So,
I think what I want to say is from sausages to salvos. Is that right?
SMS. Right?
Anyway, now we are at the end of it. Anyway. And so I come to Auburn and then start work, fast back to the work. And I started with a lady called Glenda. Yeah. She's pure Aussie. She's white Aussie. So I do Mondays to Friday. She comes on a Monday. And when we work for the first 3 months, and she said to me, Edward, I don't think I'm fit for this role. I think you are more better. You know, you can do it much better. You can, you know, you have all the way to talk to people. You're encouraging people. You're a very front office person. And that's where I grew. That was where my growth changed. Like, that's the concierge was where I grew. Like, I met so many good people. I met so many people that love upon me. Even to the, apart from the Salvation Army, but people from the community that comes in there, who give me advices. I have time to talk and begin to understand some of the slangs. And so that was in 2012. 2016, I was asked to come up to Auburn and start a ministry assistant position. And a year later, I was also offered the opportunity to become an auxiliary lieutenant in Auburn, and then appointed to Auburn Salvos as assistant corps officer or whatever it is, and as assistant there.
And was Adrian Kirsten there then? Because I believe he has a, you know, a big role. He had a big role.
Definitely. So when we were in Auburn, Adrian was a soldier. Adrian and Natalie, they came from, I think, Maury. And so Adrian was really, really influential. Adrian and Natalie were very, really influential. And by then, nothing has left. So Adrian was the one that was keeping the momentum, checking on us, trying to, like, mentorship.
Yes.
He was actually a big, big player into our leadership, you know. And it will take us out. We'll get to do things together. In fact, there was a time I came up with an idea which was not too clear, if I could say it. It's International Sunday.
Yes.
So Nelson and Adrian come together and they sit with me, and then I re-explained the idea, and we were able to do that. We got up to 400 and more people attending on that Sunday from different cultures to celebrate culture on that day. So Adrian has been a pivot role in working through some of the things that we do. Even when we get stuck sometimes, we run to him. Because he's the first go-to person, and we'll go to him and then have a conversation. And Adrian is really, really good at one thing. He's blunt. He don't babysit. Adrian don't babysit. If you don't do it right, he will tell you. But not that to discourage you, for you to grow. Like, it will help you to develop from that one. Not like bash you or no. It will say, this is not right. I think this is what it should be. It's up to you to understand what he's saying. Yeah. So, but in that development stage, coming into leadership, he was one of the key people.
So Edward, listening to all this, Salvation Army has been a beautiful blessing in your life, I would say. And I would like to ask you in Pidgin, and excuse me, my listeners, if I don't do justice, but in Pidgin language, which is spoken widely in Sierra Leone, it's "How Salvation Army don't help you for grow near you life and ministry."
I'll repeat that question. Yes.
Excellent. Yes. So in English, it is, in what ways has the Salvation Army positively impacted your life and ministry?
Definitely. Even me being today an officer, it's part of the encouragement of the Salvation Army, both the soldiers that we met in the Corps. I can mention so many, many, but I'll give you one example, one of them. Our very first Christmas in December 2009, we got an invitation by Peter Woodbury to have lunch, Christmas lunch, with his family. And so when we arrived there, it was a big feast. Everybody was there. And in fact, the surprising thing was all of us that was invited got a gift with our names. Showed a powerful, powerful, powerful belonging space. You know, we're encouraged to do everything together. Yeah. And many, many times, Peter Woodbury will go to BLA for support person. Or if something is not right, they will come with us. You know, when my mom was really, really sick, they raised some money for me to send back home to see how I can support my mom. And like, we are just so welcome in that space. makes us feel belong.
Yes.
And tell me, where are you now, Edward? What's your appointment where you are right now?
So I am presently in Queensland, far north Queensland, Cairns Salvation Army.
Yep.
Myself.
Wow, and tropical Cairns. Back to your back to the temperature you're used to, right?
Yes, yes. Tropical, very warm, 28, 29 degrees.
Yeah. Fantastic.
And so myself and Viola are team members working with Major Ben Johnson as a team leader.
Okay. Yeah. Fantastic.
And talk about a little bit about your current role there. So like I understand that it's very multicultural at Cairns, the communities. So how do you see the ministry impacting those, both local and the cultural?
It's kind of in an intercultural space, if I want to put it. So we have three set of congregations.
Yeah.
They are all under the Salvation Army Cairns.
Mm.
So we have the Nepali.
Yeah.
They meet on a Saturday morning. We have the Swahili Africans, they meet in a Sunday afternoon, and then our English service, which is on the Sunday morning. The unique thing there is that these congregations are not as rebel, but they are part of the Cairns Church as well as Salvation Army Church. Yeah. The only thing that they meet separately in that space is that they are flowing in their language fluently and attracting other people to come to Christ or to know Jesus.
Mm.
And so we usually get 3 months combined services every 3 months, and we meet combined, we all meet together and have one service. But sometimes in the morning or English service, we got people from the Nepali and the African people are still attending the morning service, being part of the morning service, you know.
Yep.
And so and then we have First Nation people, we have PNG people. In fact, our church got one of the founding elders of the First Nation people here in Cairns, Uncle Peter.
Wow. We finish all our interviews with this question, Edward. What would you say to your 15-year-old self if you could speak into that young man's life with what you know today?
I would encourage them to be humble, and I will encourage them to stay focused, because what we see out there is not everything. But with time, we can unveil the reality of who God is and how God can walk through someone's life.
At 15, were you still in Guinea or were you in Australia? You're obviously still.
No, I was in Sierra Leone.
Troubled.
I was in Sierra Leone. Yeah, I was in Sierra Leone.
Right.
I was in high school. And then I was at Sunday school by then, you know. And I was very active in my Sunday school youth days.
Right. Yeah. But it must have been quite scary and troubled at some point through that season. Well, maybe not 15, maybe more in your 20s and 30s, wasn't
well,
it, that you had the Civil
the
War?
The time that it became more scary is when, after high school, you know, getting to integrate or getting to mix with other people at uni and the way life goes in their own way. Remember, Bryce, a culture in Sierra Leone is quite different from here, definitely different. And I used to make fun with Viola. I said, Viola, if our parents were in Australia, they would have owned them for human rights abuse. You know, because they are strict on you, right? And the strictness that they placed on you was like, you can't do this, you can't do this. Even at age 21, you still have restrictions that you have to stay or boundaries that you have to flow. It's in. But it is not like that. And definitely, I'm not saying that should be here, no. All we need to do is how we can best encourage them. Don't give up on them. Try to be friendly.
Yeah. Okay.
Wow. So inspiring. Inspiring to see such a beautiful commitment to fostering inclusivity amongst these communities, Edward. I think it was such a treat for us, right, Bryce? Listening to Edward's journey about his faith, his passion for the community, and obviously intercultural ministry. So, Edward, for our listeners today, how can they get involved in supporting call communities and intercultural ministries in their own churches, in their own course? What would you like to say?
If you want to integrate, if you want to get more people from the nations, you're going to speak their language, not their tongue, personally, I'm saying. the love language, understanding, patient. I mean, be there for them. Sometimes you don't need to say anything. Your presence means a lot. Your encouragement, you know, and sometimes listening to their stories. Some people are really close out of the trauma, out of the frustration, out of the panic. I don't know how to speak English. You know, how can I communicate to this nation? How can I communicate to these people? And so sometimes those are the things that grab around people from the nations. But if we're able to sit with them, listen to them, encourage them, who gets the best out of them? Remember, most of them are technocrats. Some of them are well-educated people in their own skill. They got so much to offer, even within that church setting. You know, we just have to make them feel belong.
Wow. Beautiful. So beautifully said, Edward. Like, it really touched my heart. And as you rightly said, love has no language, right? And everyone understands that language. So it's such a practical and heartfelt advice. And I think we truly blessed to have you today and loved to listen to your journey right from Limbaugh to Australia. And thank you for the amazing work you're doing. And in Sierra Leone, in Creole, I would like to say, "Ah, gladi for where you came, talk to we." Is that right, Edward?
"I'm glad the way you come, talk to we."
Yes. And just wanted to say thank you. Thank you very much for being part of our Rich Tapestries. Stay blessed and may God bless all your work.
When I say for thank you for bringing me can I today and for make I can talk small about my own story. And I believe say people away hear this story will be blessed and then go see something for be part of the Salvation Army, regardless of Poseidon commands. Let God bless you now all.
Awesome.
Thanks, Edward. Thanks. Bless you heaps, mate.
Thank you, Edward.
Mikko Kutande.